Hello, everyone. We're going to give a few more minutes for everyone else to join. We'll begin shortly.
Hello?
Hello, we heard you. Was that a test?
This is Greg Aaron.
How are you doing, Greg?
Hi.
We're going to get started shortly. Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's discussion about new GTLD program safeguards against DNS abuse. I'm Nicole Davenport, GTD Communications Manager for ICANN. Before we begin, I'd like to cover a few things. This discussion is being recorded. Recordings and supporting materials will be published at newgtlds.icann.org/reviews. The purpose of this discussion is to hear from you. There are multiple ways that you can participate. If you're able to, we recommend entering the discussion through the Adobe Connect room. After you've logged into Adobe Connect, you will be prompted to join the audio conference. The meeting can dial you at your preferred phone number, or you can enter in listen-only mode. Joining the audio conference through Adobe Connect will allow you to speak and signal that you have something to say by raising your hand. For those who select the listen-only mode, you can type your discussion points into the Adobe Connect pod called Comments for Discussion. This is separate from the chat pod. The moderator will read your comments aloud to the group. Note that you will only be able to see your own discussion points when using this pod. Those who are joining us via phone only, the moderator will pull the audience periodically asking if you'd like to be added to the comment queue. At that point, please state your name and we will call on you for comment when feasible. The moderator will switch back and forth between each group of participants. For the purposes of this discussion, the chat room has only two functions. Number one, it allows participants to have informal discussions with one another. And two, you can use it to report technical difficulties or ask questions of ICANN staff. Comments made in the chat pod will not be read aloud. For those on the audio bridge, please keep your lines muted when you're not speaking. To mute and unmute your line, dial *6. When the moderator calls on you, please state your name and affiliation before speaking and make sure that your phone is not on speaker. Remember to abide by ICANN's expected standards of behavior regardless of what method you're using to participate. The participation information you've just heard has been posted in the Adobe Connect Notes pod for reference. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to our moderator, Brian Aitchison, lead researcher, GDD Operations and Policy Research.
Thanks, Nicole, and thank you all very much for joining the call reviewing new GTLD program safeguards against DNS abuse. We're very happy to have you here and appreciate the time you're taking to offer your input on this important topic. My name is Brian Aitchison, and I'm the research lead for the DNS abuse review, and I'll also serve as the moderator for this discussion. And I'll have my contact details at the end of our session if you need to get in touch. We also have Karen Lentz, Anna Loop, and Nicole Davenport providing support for the call. So we'll move to our agenda. I'll go over it and talk a bit about the purpose and goals of this talk. We're ultimately here to aid the work of the Competition, Consumer Choice, and Consumer Trust Review Team, who's exploring the effectiveness of 9 safeguards to mitigate DNS abuse in the new GTLD program. And that line of work is being carried out in fulfillment of Section 9.3 of ICANN's Affirmation of Commitments. If you look at the suggested reading in the announcement for this discussion, you'll see a paper called Mitigating Malicious Conduct, which discusses the background and rationale behind these 9 safeguards. We're currently drafting a report on the effectiveness of the safeguards and how they're being used. And so we want to get your input on them and your experience with them. So we'll want to explore a few topics. First, we want to discuss a working definition of DNS abuse. Which activities encompass DNS abuse? Some can be quite clear-cut, and some fall into a gray area. So this is something we'll want to pin down. Second, we want to look at ways of measuring abusive activities in the DNS. Presumably, this would be by activity, so how to measure something like spam, phishing, or any other activity we deem relevant. But in particular, and to the extent possible, we'd like to examine any proposed measures as potential proxies for measuring the effectiveness of the 9 safeguards that are really the main focus of the discussion. So that's something to keep in mind. Third, we want to discuss specific means of measuring the effectiveness of the 9 safeguards. You'll see that many of them don't necessarily lend themselves to straightforward quantitative measurement. For example, how do we measure the effectiveness of a thick whois as a safeguard? We can measure its accuracy to an extent, but is that an adequate measure of effectiveness? And finally, we'd like to get your impressions on these safeguards as an aspect of your personal or professional experience. Do you see them as effective? Why or why not? And would you recommend we explore any other kinds of safeguards to mitigate DNS abuse? And these last two topics, topics 4 and 5 on the agenda, will comprise the bulk of our talk here. So that's what we'd like to cover, but before diving in, there's just a few things to note about the call. In addition to providing a kind of brainstorming forum, it's also a qualitative research call. We are gathering data here. We won't quote anyone directly, but your input will feed into the report we're producing and may be referenced in a general way. And the call, as Nicole mentioned, is also being recorded. In terms of designing a research project, we're in an exploratory stage right now. Our goal at this point is to keep everything as transparent and interactive as possible. There will be a chance for public comment on the report we produce for the CCT review team, and we're aiming to get that out by mid-February. So we encourage everyone to speak. One of the main goals is to bounce ideas off each other as much as possible. But if things do get a bit crowded and you don't feel you can get a word in, please do use the comments for discussion box to log your input. And that's not the chat box.
Am I being cut off?
Sorry. And that's not the chat box, which can be used for side discussions. And if you still can't say what you'd like or need to jump off the call for whatever reason, we do have a questionnaire available so you can log your input that way. I know there were some difficulties registering to receive the questionnaire, so if that does remain an issue for you, please get in touch with me using my email on the last slide. And also note, we'll have to adhere quite strictly to our timeline for each topic, so apologies in advance if you do get cut off, but please use these other input methods if you do. And I think that's all I need to say in terms of an introduction, so we'll jump right in to our first topic. We've allocated 15 minutes to the topic of how to define DNS abuse. Obviously, there's a number of activities that could be included, but the idea here is to discuss what should be inbounds for analysis and what shouldn't. And, of course, any linkages between how we define the topic and our safeguards would be welcome in this context. So, I'll pose the questions. Which activities do you consider to be DNS abuse? And if you could put forth a globally accepted definition, what would it be? And we'll give you a few moments to collect your thoughts and otherwise turn it over to you, the forum. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have a comment and you're in the Adobe Connect room, if you look at the top portion of your screen, you'll see a small icon with a person raising their hand. Just click that icon, and that will let us know that you have something to say. If you're on the phone, you can state your name at this time, and we'll put you in the question queue.
Great. We have a hand raise from Greg Aaron. Greg, please go ahead.
Good morning. And I'm just here in my personal capacity. A few years ago, there was a GNSO PDP working group. It was called the Registration Abuse Policy Working Group. One of the things that that group was tasked with doing was coming up with a definition of DNS abuse. So one of the things we should do is refer to that, because that was a definition that was developed through the consensus of that working group. And a lot of thought went into it. The RAPWG final report is available on the ICANN website. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to post the definition that the group came up with in the comments box. And the definition reads, abuse is an action that A, causes actual and substantial harm, or is a material predicate of such harm, and B, is illegal or illegitimate, or is otherwise considered contrary to the intention and design of a stated legitimate purpose if such purpose is disclosed. Okay. There's a lot there. I'll just say that this was a general definition. Then that report went into a variety of specific kinds of abuses, like malware and phishing and so forth. One reason this group developed a general definition is because every once in a while, some person with bad intent out there develops a new way of doing something. All right, so we wanted a definition that was an umbrella definition, and then we could have illustrative examples. So that's a little bit of history from that working group. Thanks.
Great, Greg. Thank you. We have a comment from Reg Levy in the comments for discussion, and that reads, to an extent, that DNS abuse is defined in new GTLD registry agreements Spec 11-4A, spam, phishing, farming, and illegal activity, as well as cyber squatting or other behavior that infringes on the rights of others, parentheses, noting that illegal, quote-unquote, is a woogly definition with international contracts. Thanks, Reg. We now have a comment from Michele Nalon. Michele, thank you. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Michele, for the record. Keeping this short and sweet, echoing what Reg was saying, the illegal is problematic. when we're looking at DNS abuse. If you just look at the headlines in international media over the last few days, outrage in Italy because the Italian government decided to cover up statues of nudes due to the visit of the Iranian government or something equally nutty. You know, what is illegal in the US may not be illegal in Ireland. What's illegal in Iran probably isn't illegal in Ireland. So I'd be very wary of putting too much emphasis on that word within any definition of DNS abuse. I'd be much more interested in seeing an abuse of DNS abuse which talks about harm, about damage, about, you know, the material, all of those kind of things. It's just illegal, as I say, that worries me quite a bit. Thanks.
Thanks, Michele, for that. That's a great point. Another point to raise, and going back to what Greg was talking about regarding this kind of definitional framework from the RAPWG, working group, they made what I consider to be a pretty useful distinction between use abuse and registration abuse issues. Use of domain names would include activities like phishing, spam, malware, use of stolen credentials. Registration abuse are activities such as cyber squatting, front running, fake renewal notices, just to give a few examples of what they're classifying as registration abuse. And obviously, ICANN has some control over registration abuse issues through our contractual agreements. Use abuse issues can be a bit more problematic from ICANN's perspective and tend to fall more to the contracted parties. So just to add a little extra flavor to that comment, to Greg's comment. So thank you. I'll leave it to the forum to provide additional input. We see a hand raised from Alan Woods. Alan, please go ahead.
All right, it's Alan Woods here from Rightside. I just wanted to follow up with something that just Reg's comment, actually. I just wanted to counsel some caution on that some of the registry agreements, she used specifically the term spam as well. Some of the registry agreements, of course, don't have the word spam in it as well. It does vary from agreement to agreement, so I just wanted to counsel a bit of caution in including that at that level.
Great. Thank you, Alan, very much.
Thank you.
See a hand raised from Michele. Michele, please go ahead.
Yeah, but I hope Alan isn't saying that he thinks that spam isn't a form of DNS abuse. I know he's a lawyer, so he's got himself and Reg can now get into a little battle over the words and terminology. But if we can all agree that spam is a form of DNS abuse, then I'm happy. But if it's just a matter of the legalities of what's in the contract or not, That's a different issue entirely.
If I can just very quickly go back to that. No, I completely agree. I was just saying that if we're trying to find a definition and we're using that as a baseline, we have to be careful that there are different definitions out there if we're using different registry agreements. But yes, the lawyer in me is agreeing with you, Michele.
Great. Thanks very much. Reg Levy wants to jump in as well. Reg, please go ahead.
Thanks. This is Reg Levy for the record. So assuming that we can agree upon a definition, and I think that the definition that was put into the chat is a little bit broader, what is the purpose of this report? What are we going to do with that definition?
Reg, I think that's directed at me, but this will inform the work of the CCT review team. So it will be the definition they'll be using to inform their work.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next, we have a comment in the chat box from Steve Metallitz, which reads, apologies if this duplicates Reg's comment, which was read out quite quickly. Sorry for that. But paragraph 3A of Spec 11 of the new GTLD registry agreement could be another source of this definition. Is this provision, which is found in all the new GTLD registry agreements, considered a safeguard for the purposes of this study? Steve, we're looking into that right now. All right, Steve, thank you. We'll get back to you on that. We have one moment. Actually, Karen Lentz is going to jump in on that. So one moment, Steve.
Hi, Steve. This is Karen Lentz. How are you? To answer the question about the safeguards in Spec 11, which came from the GAC safeguard advice, it's something that we're looking at and interested in what people think. We haven't had the discussion yet with the CCT review team as to the scope of the safeguards that they want to look at. We're starting on this call with the list from the development of the new GTLD program and the specific set of mechanisms that were then termed tools to mitigate malicious conduct. So if you or if anyone has a view on the inclusion of these additional kind of later added points in Spec 11 and recommendations as to how we might go about looking at some of those things, which include terms of reference for terms of use for registrants and some of the security reporting that registries are doing. So if people have suggestions on what we might look at in terms of those safeguards, that would be helpful also. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. We have a few comments in the discussion queue. We have one from Maxine Alzoba, who's asking, is automated form filing abuse form used for ads, in parentheses, regarded as spam? So we'll have that question out there as I go through some of two more comments. From Reg Levy, Spec 11.3b, quote, distributing malware, abusively operating botnets, phishing, piracy, trademark or copyright infringement, fraudulent or deceptive practices, counterfeiting or otherwise engaging in activity contrary to applicable law, and providing, parentheses, consistent with applicable law and any related procedures, consequences for such activities, including suspension of the domain name. Great. Thanks, Reg. Next comment is from Matthias Pfeiffer from Dot Berlin. Just to note, most so-called DNS abuse is a regular use of the DNS, e.g. abusive domain registration. So let's make a more clear distinction between the intention of an action and the working part of the DNS. Great. Thanks, Matthias. We'd also like to poll those on the phone. If there's anyone who'd like to provide their input who's not directly on the Adobe Connect, please state your name and we can add you to our discussion queue. Okay, it looks like everyone has had a chance to say what they like, and we're drawing to the end of our time for this topic. So we're going to move on to topic two. We'll allocate 15 minutes to discuss methods of measuring DNS abuse, and that's in general. One of the ideas behind this is we're considering assessing the rate of DNS abuse occurring in new GTLDs as a kind of contextual or benchmark measure to frame our analysis of our safeguards. Some of the things we were thinking of when adding this question were, Are there methods that are commonly used and perhaps perceived as best practice measures of DNS abuse? What do we as researchers want to look for in these kinds of measures? Are there considerations we should know about regarding accuracy, representativeness, depth, these kinds of things? And I don't want to prompt the discussion too much, but any ideas you may have about this would be helpful. So I'll leave it to you, give you a few moments to collect your thoughts, and otherwise turn it over to the forum. Thank you. We have a comment from Christina in the Amazon registry. Request to ICANN, would you please make available the comments for discussion that were submitted? I can't type fast enough to capture them as they're read out loud. Okay, thank you. Thanks, Christina. Thank you. We will do that after the call. Thanks. And we see that McKaylee has his hand raised. McKaylee, please go ahead.
Thanks. I think obvious ones from my perspective would be looking at clusters of incidents. So, for example, is there a high percentage of abuse in a particular TLD? Is there a high percentage of abuse with domains registered via a particular registrar? I mean, these are kind of things that just make sense to me at a very simple level. So, for example, you know, you need to look at it in terms of percentages, not in numbers as well, which I think is very important, because if you look at numbers, then GoDaddy and VeriSign always come out looking terrible, which isn't particularly fair on either of them. If a TLD only has 100 names and 25 of them are in multiple reports from Spamhaus and other relatively reliable sources, then that's obviously an issue. Whereas if you have 25 domain names in a TLD with over a million, then it's not really an issue. I mean, that makes sense to me. But the same thing, I mean, one of the issues that we've seen previously is where security researchers and ICANN staff and others are kind of going, oh, well, we think there's a problem with X, but we haven't really mapped it back to Y. And it's like, why don't you? I mean, if there's no... You know, mapping things back to registrar, mapping it back to registry, mapping it back to potentially within ThickQuiz, you could map it back to to countries of registrar and other data points. Then you might be able to see if there are patterns, and maybe there aren't. Thanks.
Thanks, McKaylee. That's a great point. We have Greg Aaron with his hand raised as well. Greg, please go ahead.
Thank you. I'm a security researcher. Among other things, I publish some research on phishing through the Anti-Phishing Working Group. One thing to note is that each type of abuse is different. You need sometimes different data in order to analyze what's going on. So that's important. They each have their own characteristics, and sometimes you need to have different metrics to understand those different types of problems. McKaylee touched on something which is important, which is proportionality. Obviously, a big registrar that has a lot of domains may also have a lot of domains flagged for problems, but that's because they have a large market share. So there are some scoring systems, for example. You can score abuse based upon the number of domains in a registry or a registrar, and that gives you a basis to compare things. That's one way to do it. We've developed some of those methods in our APWG work. McKaylee also said something that I agree with, which is there's numbers and then there's what they mean. Raw numbers are good to a certain extent, and you have to gather those. But then there's the question of, well, what do the statistics actually mean? Are the problems located in a few places, for example? Why is the activity happening? What allows it to happen? And those are questions which do require a little bit of human analysis. So numbers are important, but getting at the underlying phenomena to understand why we have these problems and where they exist is also important. Thank you.
That's great. This is Brian Aitchison. I'd just like to offer a comment on that as well as a researcher. I just want to agree with both Michaela and Greg. One of the things I've encountered as I've been doing kind of a literature review over the past month or two is there is an abundance of descriptive statistics on what's going on in one particular area. There's very few causal statistical or inferential statistical analysis that identifies sort of root factors or causal factors behind these numbers. So that's one of actually the points of this call is to identify sort of cause-effect measures, independent, dependent type variables that we can test through the proposition of certain kinds of hypotheses. There's also a dearth of hypotheses posed in these kinds of studies as well. It's just kind of there's this many bad actors or bad activities going on in XTLD or whatever the study happens to focus on. So definitely agree with both of you there. But I will move on to the comments box. We have a comment from Rubens Kuhl, who says, first we need to ask why we're measuring it. We should strive to avoid it, but measuring requires definitions and precision that might prevent us from fighting the good fight. Thanks, Rubens. We also have a comment from Alan Woods, who states, I think an important query here is, what is a reliable source? Before we even get to measuring levels, how is it being measured? That's a great question, Alan. Thank you. We also have Reg Levy with her hand raised. Reg, please go ahead. I think we might, Reg may have dropped off or is encountering
Sorry,
some kind
I'm
of technical
difficulty. I apologize.
Oh, hi, Reg. Go ahead.
Reg Levy from Minds Machines. I have a question for the presenter about a comment that he made when presenting this topic about the fact that we wanted to know how to measure DNS abuse, once we define it, in new GTLDs. And I'm wondering why we're not looking at legacy GTLDs.
Actually, we are, and that's something we'll kind of talk about in the next slides, because I think a comparative analysis between the sort of two eras, if you want to call it that, the pre-safeguard era and the post-safeguard era is definitely on our radar, so to speak. One of the sort of ideas we had in terms of a sort of general theoretical or hypothetical context is presumably we would see a sort of cleaner DNS space, cleaner in terms of less abusive behavior following the rollout of these safeguards. So that's definitely something we'd want to test and ideally find a way to link the variables within each era to a sort of DNS abuse outcome. So, Reg, that is something we're looking at. I hope that answers your question.
So when you said that we were only discussing this as it pertained to new GTLDs, you didn't intend that. You meant to say all GTLDs.
Well, the focus right now is on new GTLDs, but that is something we're considering in terms of research design. And Karen Lentz wants to jump in real quick. Thanks.
Thanks, Brian. And thank you, Reg. So, to add to what Brian said, the reason we're focusing on the new GTLD program in kind of a lot of the language is one of the purposes of this discussion is to provide some data to the Competition Choice and Trust Review Team, which is charged with looking at the effectiveness of the safeguards that were put in place for the new GTLD program. So, obviously, in looking at those items, you're focusing pretty much on the GTLDs in which they're being used. You know, as Brian pointed out, there's also, you know, when you talk about DNS abuse, it's a larger universe. Some of the things may have overlaps, or there may be comparisons you can draw. We're obviously, you know, speaking as I can, you are obviously interested in all DNS and abuse, not just new gTLDs. But I hope that helps clarify the point of this discussion. Thanks.
So I have a brief follow-on to that, because it's my understanding that the only place where ICANN doesn't have a purview about DNS abuses in ccTLDs. So this is a discussion about gTLDs, correct?
Correct.
Thanks, Reg. I'd also like to poll those on the phone. If there's anyone who'd like to add their input, please state your name, and we'll add you to the discussion queue. Okay, I'm seeing a comment from Crystal Ondo from Donuts in the feedback queue. It reads, I believe the ICANN CTO has stated that ICANN plans to measure abuse, quote-unquote, across all I believe the ICANN CTO has stated that ICANN plans to measure abuse, quote-unquote, across all TLDs, new and legacy. Is that tied to this effort?
Hi, Crystal. This is Karen Lentz. To answer that question, there are a couple of initiatives within ICANN that do go to metrics and measurements in a few areas, one of which you mentioned is DNS abuse, and there's, for example, one on looking at marketplace considerations, some technical considerations. So that is tied to basically an ICANN-wide initiative to, you know, gather more data to help us look at how we're doing it at one of the strategic objectives in the strategic plan. And so the goal is to put in place a framework where we have this index that is measured and can be assessed against on a going forward basis, that would become sort of a steady state thing. So it's not explicitly tied to this, which is an exercise looking at the safeguards that were put in place for new gTLDs. Obviously, because we're talking about metrics and DNS abuse, there's some correlation. But just in terms of the goals of the exercise, there's a distinction there.
We've got a couple more minutes allocated to this topic, so we'll give you a few moments to collect any thoughts you may have. Thank you. Michele, we see you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'll just throw this in here because I think people have mentioned in the chat, and it's kind of probably self-evident to some people. You know, a lot of us would rely on reports from DNS blacklists of varying kinds. I know several of the registries on this call have been using various services, both in-house and outsourced, but a lot of it it's based on reports that you get from various systems, various services. For us, for example, our focus is, as a hosting provider, we're interested in compromised websites. We really don't care too much about domain names themselves. So we take the feed from Google's Safe Sites thing. We also get stuff from Spam House and from a few other sources. And most of those are relatively reliable. But I suppose the thing when it comes to this is reliable in relation to what? I mean, I think as a source of reports, yes, but we all know that there are different levels of quality around the reports that you get from different sources. And when the more important question, I suppose, is what are you meant to do with the data? If somebody's forcing a contractual obligation on a registry or registrar to suspend a domain name, it's very different to simply making the registrar or the registry aware that there could be a problem with a domain name. So I think that's where people start getting a little bit nervous. Thanks.
Thank you, Michele. All right. That's all the time we have allocated for this topic. We really appreciate your input on that. That's a lot of great issues to consider. So we'll move on to topic three, which is measuring new GTLD program safeguards. How do we measure the effectiveness of these nine safeguards? One of the main issues we in the CCT review team will be facing is how to measure effectiveness as a concept. And it's a tough area because a lot of these safeguards aren't necessarily amenable to straightforward quantitative measurement. As it stands, effectiveness of a particular safeguard can only be loosely inferred without a strict definition of what we mean by it and how we choose to measure it, which I think we're all aware of now. Due to time constraints, we won't go through each safeguard in order, but encourage you to jump in with suggestions on any of them. So I'll leave it to the forum. How do we measure the effectiveness of these nine safeguards that are up on the screen now? Thank you. Michele, see your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just keep talking until somebody else puts their hand up. Maybe the question in some cases might be better answered by looking at what the issues are rather than trying to measure the effectiveness, if that makes sense. I mean, it kind of makes more sense in my head. So, for example, centralized zone file access, I know from speaking to several registry operators that this is causing a lot of problems due to the way it's been set up. I mean, it's causing problems for them. I also know from Kevin Murphy's is on this webinar. Kevin's had problems getting zone file access from various operators. So there's obviously some failures there as opposed to successes. Some of the other ones, I have no idea how the hell you could measure it. Because, I mean, like, okay, you prohibited wildcarding, so you're being asked then to measure the non-existence of something. So I don't know how that works. Thanks.
And Michele, I'll respond to that. That is indeed the issue we're facing, is how to measure the absence of something quite difficult, potentially impossible. One of our sort of fallback measures, and I'll sort of put this to all of you as well as what you think of it, but is relying on more qualitative feedback, doing things like interviews, focus groups, this kind of forum, to see how these safeguards have been used, how they're perceived, in the absence of solid quantitative data. So just a thought there. I'll leave it to the forum to respond to that, or how, in general, we can measure the effectiveness of these safeguards, the core question. Thank you. Maxime Alzoba is asking how are registries being vetted? And Maxime, I would turn you to the mitigating malicious conduct paper that is linked on the announcement to this discussion, and it provides a very thorough overview of how registries are being vetted. So thank you. Greg Aaron, we see you have your hand up. Greg, please go ahead.
Thank you. A couple of the safeguards on the list are basically DNS best practices. Through various discussions, these were arrived at as things that should or need to be done. And so because there was a recognized problem that you're trying to prevent, it may be very difficult to measure the effect of it, but they nevertheless kind of needed to be done. One example is we have DNSSEC because it prevents certain kinds of abuses. We don't allow wildcarding because the community looked at that a number of years ago and decided that that was not a practice that we wanted to see in the GTLD world. So you can't measure them, but it was decided that we needed to do them. Some of these other ones you can't measure.
Great. Thank you, Greg. We have a comment from Heath Dixon. Will abuse be measured by one party or by many parties who are expected to use the same methodology? Can we fit this in now? Sorry, Heath. Thanks. We're going to look into that. Next, we have Rubens Kuhl from the written feedback queue, who states, we can measure the DNSSEC deployment by looking at DNSSEC records at zones, provides a link. And ntdldstats.com is already doing such a measurement, and the numbers are not pretty. Thanks, Ruben. We also have a comment from one moment, please. We have a comment from an anonymous caller. Speaking of deceptive practices, what about the spreading of misinformation to the public? I speak of the practice of informing prospective registrants searching for a domain name that is unregistered and unblocked in a GTLD that the register has not entered into an RRA to sell that. Sorry, one moment. I'm having trouble with the language here. One moment. Okay. Sorry, one moment. Speaking of deceptive practices, what about the spreading of misinformation to the public? I speak of the practice of informing prospective registrants searching for a domain name that is unregistered and unblocked in a GTLD that the registrar has not entered into an RRA to sell that, quote unquote, sorry, that name is not available for registration, please try again, end quote. If the registrar happens to be a market leader, such a statement is taken to mean exactly what it says, that the domain is not available for registration, quote-unquote, period, while in fact it is only available at that registrar, parentheses, and others who have not entered into an RRA to sell them, in parentheses. This unfavorably impacts on ICANN's commitment to increase consumer choice via the GTLD program and is damaging to GTLDs not being sold through that market leader. Okay, thank you for the comment. We have Greg Aaron with his hand raised. Thanks, Greg. Please go ahead.
I'm lowering my hand.
Okay. Thanks, Greg. We now have a comment in the discussion queue from Crystal Ondo at Donuts. Can you explain the final safeguard? Where is this program described elsewhere? Crystal, you're talking about the high security zone verification program, I presume? One moment.
Hi, Crystal. This is Karen Lentz. So to answer the question on the bottom safeguard on the list there, it was called High Security Zone Verification Program. And it's going to be hard to measure because the type of program that was proposed and back in 2009 and 10 didn't really come to fruition, but the goal of it was to have, in case of a TLD that might be seen as particularly vulnerable to abuse, that they would be able to have this set of standards by which they would be able to market themselves or label themselves as a high security zone, meaning that they had been certified to follow all these particular practices. So there was a fair amount of work in the community to come up with a framework like that. And it was in the applicant guidebook as a a voluntary designation should one be developed and agreed on. And so that was an idea that, you know, was raised and discussed quite a bit in terms of its potential to mitigate DNS abuse. And we don't have a lot of, you know, as far as what type of security requirements registries put in place, individual registries had the discretion to kind of develop their own. And so we don't have a sort of standard framework as was envisioned, and so it'll be difficult to measure that. In particular, as it was conceived, it may be useful to look at some registry practices and figure out if there are commonalities or if there could still be room for some sort of voluntary certification type program. Thanks.
Thanks, Karen. I'd like to poll those on the phone. If anybody would like to be added to the comment queue, please state your name and we'll add you to it. Thanks. Crystal, we see you have your hand raised. Crystal, please go ahead.
Hi, sorry, Karen, just a follow-up. So for the last one, it was never implemented. We don't know if registries actually did it. I'm just trying to figure out how that's going to be measured. I know you said it'd be hard. I guess I'm just confused why it even made it onto this list of safeguards to begin with then.
Thanks, Crystal. That's a good question. We included it here because we were drawing from a memorandum that was detailing all of the malicious conduct mitigation measures that were put in place for the program at the time. So that was our starting point, using that list, and we didn't necessarily want to leave it off as, you know, precluding discussion about it. But, you know, I don't think that we're you know, it's fruitful to try to figure out ways to measure a whole lot about it. It's just there for kind of reference and completeness.
We have a comment in the comment box from Steve Metallis. Given the failure of high security zone verification to come to fruition, will the study look at the higher security measures that some registrars have voluntarily adopted? If some of these have proven effective, they could be incorporated as mandatory for future rounds. Steve, just to answer your question, to the extent that we have information available, yes, it will be included, even if it's more of just a review of what has happened in that area. Thank you. We have a comment from Maxime Alzoba, who poses a question. Who is going to sponsor the high-end security being mandatory?
Hi, Maxime. This is Karen. I think that's not something that's being discussed at this point. We're looking at, you know, a proposal that was being discussed during the formation of the program. And it could, you know, be discussed further, but currently there's not any discussion about making something like that mandatory.
Great. Any other comments on how to measure the effectiveness of these safeguards? We'll leave it a few moments. And if anyone's on the phone who'd like to speak up, please state your name and we'll add you to the queue.
So, Brian, one more note on this topic. There was a question earlier in the comments from Heath Dixon, which was, will abuse be measured by one party or by many parties who are expected to use the same methodology? So that's a good question also. We think there are currently a lot of people who are measuring abuse of different forms. Some are focusing on a specific type of activity. Others might be looking at, a specific TLD or region. So I think there's already a lot of data out there. And we're not seeking to, change what people are studying and how they're measuring it. What we are seeking to do is create kind of a common understanding of the definitions and what we're looking to find in terms of having the CCT review team look at abuse and the safeguards that are part of the program. So I hope that helps. Thanks.
We have another question from Heath in our comments queue, which is how to measure implementation or effectiveness, ? And that is indeed what we're trying to sort of wrap our heads around here. So open to any ideas, Heath, and if you think of anything, you can always get in touch with me using the contact information that will be given at the end of this presentation. So thanks. Okay, it looks like everyone has provided the input they want to, so we will move on to the next and final topic, which is about getting your input or experience on these safeguards from the perspective of your role or organization. How were these safeguards effective or not? Why do you think they were or were not effective? And this is open discussion time, so we encourage you to jump in on any safeguard. But if you have had any experience with them, using them, their degree of effectiveness for you, please jump in comments. And we'll turn it over to the forum. Thank you. Alan, we see you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I suppose just on one, talking about the centralization of the CZDS system, I suppose I came in kind of at the tail end of all this being done, and really my experience of the CZDS system is that it is more of a nuisance than anything. I mean, we've now, instead of, it was difficult to get the zone file access for several different providers, but in creating the CZDS system, you've just created a central repository where one simple click can give you access, fine, it has to be approved, but gives you access to all of the zone files, which, there is suggestion that certain people are pretty much getting this access, sticking by the rules as have been stated by ICANN, and then reselling it on and, mining that data, adding it to other databases, and that's causing a much wider effect. And, I mean, It hasn't affected, thankfully, us that much here in Rightside, but, I mean, I have seen it from other people, so that would be one of my concerns about centralizing CZDS systems, that it just made things a bit easier for the malicious actor.
That's great, Alan. Thank you for that. Any other comments on the other safeguards or, indeed, the CZDS in that vein? Reg, we see you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Reg Levy from Minds Machines. I think the problem with the CZDS is it's not very C. It's actually completely decentralized, and each registry has to approve basically any request that comes in, and it's just more busy work. It would be much more helpful if it were, in fact, centralized. And allow people to log in, put in the information. It, you know, all you have to do is have a reason, doesn't even have to be a good one, and an IP address, and then just automatically approve everything.
Thanks, Rich. Sounds like people are agreeing with you in the chat, Rich. And I've brought up the 9 safeguards again on the slide, so please feel free to comment on any of them on their effectiveness or non-effectiveness.
This is just a reminder that if you're not speaking, please mute your line by dialing *6.
And we have a comment in the written feedback queue from Gustavo. We have many of these safeguards in place in our legacy TLD.post, and in addition to these and other measures, it has had been successfully and is recommended to have them. In addition, we would suggest to implement additional verification for registrants' requests. Thank you, Gustavo. And we have a hand raised from Crystal Ondo from Donuts. Crystal, please go ahead.
I think the CZDS is very hard to use, especially for portfolio registries. We get anywhere between 7 and 10,000 requests a day. And I know I've talked to ICANN staff about that before. It's just impossible to go through it. So if you're looking at it again, that's something to consider.
Great, Crystal. Thank you for that. Next, we have a comment from Elaine Prius at Donuts. Regarding DNSSEC deployment, we see very little uptake by the registrants. You can see exactly how many in the zone files. Thank you, Elaine. We have another comment from Christina Rosette at Amazon Registry. While CZDS was intended to allow more efficient access to users of that data, the current implementation of it is very inefficient. We are quite concerned about the very real likelihood that we will have to devote extraordinary resources to actually review each request once all of our TLDs are delegated and launched. Please, ICANN, fix this. Okay, Christina, thank you for that input. Okay, and Christina, just to respond to that, that is something we are collecting data on, so that's great. Sorry, Elaine, sorry. And just in that vein, so any feedback on the CZDS is something we are definitely incorporating into our research process. So, Michele, you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at this one of the safeguards. Document registry and registrar level abuse contacts and policies. Provide a single point of contact to address abuse complaints and have a publicly available description of their anti-abuse measures. Have ICANN actually done anything with this? I mean, I know that the abuse contact for the registries is pretty easy to find. I'm not aware of any centralized repository of abuse contacts for registrars. And adding to that, there's an entire debacle around the abuse obligations in the RAA. But more importantly, while there's obligations in there for registrars to do various things, and there's probably things in the registry contracts as well. Nothing seems to have actually been done or coordinated around doing anything on that. You know, it just seems to be this kind of bizarre, you know, oh, we'll have this here, but it looks great, but I'm not aware of anything useful being done with it. And as, you know, Maxime says, I mean, abuse contacts helping spammers, I tend to agree with that, unfortunately. We get a lot of solicitations from domainers trying to sell us domains to our abuse contact, which I always find quite entertaining. Thanks.
Hi, Michaela. This is Karen Lentz. So thank you for the comment on the abuse points of contact as far as what's being done with them. You know, in terms of the registry agreement, they you know, have that in their agreement, and that is something that you know, compliance reviews periodically as part of their procedures to make sure that contact is available. What we really don't have from the ICANN standpoint, and what you do have and others, is you know, how useful that is to you. You know, if you put that contact out there, are you getting people actually contacting you with abuse problems that you can help them with, or are you getting, as you said, spam or offers of names for sale or other things? So that's you know, the kind of input that's helpful in assessing this point. Thanks.
Great. We have a comment from Kevin Murphy in the comments box. Speaking as a CZDS data recipient, I can confirm that it creates a lot of pointless busy work at our end of the exchange, too. Okay. Thanks, Kevin. We have another comment from Elaine Prius at Donuts. What do you mean anti-abuse measures? I'm aware of the requirement for POC and policies, but measures? Question mark. Michaeli, we see. Do you still have your hand raised, Michaeli? Is that an old hand? So we have two kind of linked comments from Elaine, and I'll just sort of read them together. What do you mean anti-abuse measures? I'm aware of the requirement for point of contact and policies, but measures, parentheses, for the document registry and registrar level of use contacts and policies.
Hi, Elaine. This is Karen. I think I was just trying to pull up the language, but I think you're right. There's a clear requirement in the registry agreement for a specific point of contact and to have you know, the policies publicly available. I think that's I think that the measures point there is essentially the policies, but I'm looking to see you know, make sure that I'm right. Thanks.
Thank you. We have a comment from Rubens Kuhl in the comment box. Thick Whois provides nothing towards assuring accuracy of Whois data since they come from the registrar. RAA clauses are the ones focusing on Whois accuracy, and that information could be obtained whether from registrar Whois or registry Whois. Thanks, Rubens. At this time, we'd like to poll the phones. Is there anyone who'd like to be added to the comment queue who's on the phone? Please state your name, if so, and we'll add you to it. We have another comment from Crystal Ondo at Donuts in the comments box. From a new gTLD registry point of view, without a clear measure of legacy TLD experience/abuse, it is hard to determine whether the safeguards have been effective. Regarding our posted abuse point of contact, we receive very few reports through that mechanism, though our abuse numbers are low in general. Great, Crystal. Thank you for that. Another comment from Elaine Prius of Donuts. Thicku is used to the registry operator when the registrar is unresponsive in dealing with abuse and notifying registrant of abuse. Thank you, Elaine. Michele, I see your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just very briefly. Thicku is the inclusion of accuracy in there is ridiculous. Just because it's Thicku is does not mean it's accurate. And I do take umbrage with Rubens's comments about it coming from the registrar. We get it from the registrant, so we're passing along the data that we have been given. If the data is bad, it's because what we were given is bad. We aren't fiddling with it. I mean, I think the important thing is, as Elaine touched on, is that with Thicku is, if the registrar's systems aren't working, if the registrar is unresponsive, if there's a whole bunch of things, the registry has that data. But it's not. But anybody suggesting that a Thicku is going to be more accurate and complete than Thinwho is, I honestly don't understand the logic behind that assertion. It doesn't make any sense to me. Thanks.
Thanks, Michele. Next, we have Greg Chaton with his hand raised. Greg, please go ahead.
Thanks. Greg Chaton here. I'm wondering if we are misinterpreting what is meant by accuracy and completeness in the rationale for Thicku is. It seems to me that perhaps we're talking about accuracy and completeness of the entire data file, not any particular Who Is record. You know, as somebody who does a fair amount of Who Is searching, you know, it's clear that you have to go to the registrar's Who Is in many cases to get the full information. And if you go to a different Who Is source, you often get truncated information. So, you know, because it's not that registrar's Who Is. So, It seems that if, in fact, what is meant is that a Thicku is will at least get all the records in one place, regardless of the accuracy or completeness of any individual record, that seems to me to be the rationale for Thicku is. But I agree that, you know, Thicku is doesn't seem to promote, you know, better quality Who Is records on a one-by-one basis, just that the aggregate clump of data that you have will be, you know, more accurate. Accurately reflect the universe of data, and whether the individual data or datum is garbage or not. Thanks.
That's a great point, Greg. Thank you very much for that. Any other comments on your experience or impressions of with these safeguards? Michele, please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm speaking from a kind of meta registrar level, not Michele Black Knight level. The registrars en masse have been having issues with the abuse contact requirements because there has been an issue around the expectations set around what would happen in the case of an abuse report. Greg and Steve and various other people who are on this call know exactly what I'm talking about. But if you want,
if you're looking at that as being part of the new GTLD safeguards, then, and you're asking about effectiveness and problems and everything else, I think it's something that's worth raising. Because essentially, you know, the idea that you can report abuse, you can report an allegation of abuse to somebody, does not mean that they're going to take any action whatsoever, or they're going to take the action that you might want them to take. And that has caused a problem. It's around kind of expectation setting and everything else. Thanks.
Thank you, Michele. Any response to that, or any other responses to experiences with these safeguards? Also, just if anyone's on the phone that would like to speak, please state your name and we'll add you to the queue. Thanks. Another question we have thought of that it'd be good to get your feedback on as well, it's the sort of last point on this slide. Are there safeguards that you would suggest we consider in our research report that aren't one of these 9 safeguards? Thank you. Okay, we'll just give it a couple more moments. It sounds like people are saying what they need to. We have a comment from Rubens Cool in the comments. Waiting period for domain activation could be promising for some verticals where instant activation is not required. Great, Rubens. Thank you. Any other recommendations in that vein or on the effectiveness or ineffectiveness of these safeguards or your general experience with them? Alan, we see your hands raised. Please go ahead.
Hi, Alan Woods here from Rightside again. This is something, I'm a bit of a broken record when it comes to this, but another thing, when considering all these safeguards and all the things that they want, you know, registries, registrars, resellers to do, one thing that always seems to get left behind is that, you know, of the liability. It's all very well and good having all these places and or these methods in place and these safeguards in place, but if the actual company who, or the actual person who needs to effect these can't do it because they're legally bound not to, or they will open themselves up to a higher liability or being sued or anything like that, which are all very legitimate concerns for a business, you know, that doesn't seem to be taken into account. So they're saying, you know, take down this domain name, but what about the consequences of that? Yes, the safeguards are there. Yes, there was a supposed trusted source, but you know, that's not really going to hold very much water in a court of law in a jurisdiction somewhere in the world. So, I mean, if you're looking at it, I would put that in as a very good consideration that, yes, they're a safeguard, but, you know, is it actually possible to enforce such a safeguard?
Great. Thank you, Alan. That's a great point. We have another comment from Elaine Pruis. Sorry, I've been mispronouncing your name as the Toyota vehicle. So, Elaine, who says, abuse safeguards in new TDLDs are very thorough and effective. Okay, thank you, Elaine. And another comment from Michele regarding Alan's comments. There are no safeguards in Ireland, for example. Okay, thank you. And McKaylee writes again, specifically DMCA. Could you elaborate on that, McKaylee?
Sorry, McKaylee, can you hear me?
We can, please, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, I wasn't sure I'd be muted or not. Okay, so the thing here is that under U.S. law, if as a provider, be that as a registry, registrar, hosting provider, whatever, if you are in receipt of a takedown that follows the DMCA template and formula and all that, there is a protection for you as the provider when you take action. Whereas if, for example, I receive something, some kind of complaint under the guise of DMCA, I can't do anything because it's I don't have that protection. Now, that doesn't mean I can't act on the report, don't get me wrong, but I don't have the legal protection that a provider based in the U.S. would have, because the DMCA doesn't exist outside the U.S., and in Ireland specifically, our government courts and what have you have not introduced an equivalent mechanism. Alan is an Irish lawyer, so he can speak to this more knowledgeably. I'm just the person who gets the reports. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, McKaylee. Coming to the last couple minutes of our allotted time for this topic, so any other feedback on the effectiveness, ineffectiveness of these safeguards or general experience? We have a comment in the comment box from Anonymous. Perhaps this is a better time to bring up the issue of deceptive practices, spreading of misinformation to the public, i.e. registrars looking to redirect prospective registrants to GTDLDs / CCTDLDs they sell if they request a GTLD they do not sell. Is it possible that the practice of informing prospective registrants searching for a domain name, parentheses, that is unregistered and unblocked, end parentheses, in a GTLD, the registrar has not entered into an RA to sell that, quote, sorry, that name is not available for registration, please try again, end quote, could be prescribed in favor of a message that appends to that response, quote, at registrar, end quote. Thank you. And another comment from McKaylee. question, why are we accepting comments from someone who will not identify themselves? Sorry, we have to read all the comments in the queue, McKaylee. But thank you. Okay. All right. Any other comments on this topic? We will move to wrapping up in just a minute or two if there's nothing else. Okay, it sounds like everyone has said what they needed to so far. But we very much appreciate you taking the time to provide your input, and this is a key part of our research process. So there's just a few last-minute items to go over. If you do think of something else or weren't able to provide all the input you wanted to, please go to our questionnaire, which is at the address on the slide here. You can also find the link to the questionnaire on the announcement for this session. And I do know there were some issues in registering to complete the questionnaire, so, and I believe those have been rectified. But if you do have issues, please get in touch with me, and I'll be happy to send one along to you. And we will need those responses by February 3rd at 6 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, which is 10 a.m. West Coast time here in the U.S. Also, if you'd like to receive a notification for when the DNS report is published, shoot me an email at brian.acheson@icann.org with the subject line DNS abuse notification. So with that, we'll stay online for just a couple more minutes to answer any follow-up questions, but otherwise that will conclude our call, and again, we very much appreciate your time on this. Goodbye.
Thanks for attending today's discussion. You can now disconnect.